C1G.
Number 9A.
We come now to the sixth day of creation, which presents the subject of truth through seven subtones. It is the first time that a day of creation is presented through all the seven possible reflection, through truth as mind, truth as spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love. Why it is so, I don't want to explain right now. I will do that tomorrow when we have another overall view on the 7 days of creation from various standpoints. So we leave it at that and leave it the question in suspense and just try to feel out what the subject is. Now, the epitome that I have given here is that truth is conscious of itself as its own perfect creation. In a way, you can see what is happening here, that the sixth day is the day of divine consciousness, where we begin to realize that creation as presented up to now, namely as the creative mind, then the unfolding and substantialization through spirit, then the identity of creation in soul, then putting all that together into a system in principle, and seeing that that principle is a living principle, and therefore always presents itself in a new way, that's really life. That all that is nice, but, and the but is, that therefore we can only take part in it if it is of the nature of consciousness, if we are conscious about it. Or else this wonderful presentation is actually just in empty air and does not translate itself to the point of conscious experience. So we come to the question of consciousness and therefore asking ourselves, what does constitute consciousness and how does that consciousness reflect itself in man? What is the form of that divine consciousness? What takes that consciousness into consciousness? And these are all the questions that are answered here. Also, when I gave you the study material, actually I forgot that I have presented that sixth day of creation in the subtones in a quite an extensive way in my level book, The Four Levels of Spiritual Consciousness, page 32 to 42. It's 10 pages, so it's quite extensive. And whenever you want to have another sense or a bigger sense, perhaps, or a clearer sense about that sixth day, perhaps you go back and study that part. That part is really good, in spite that I have written it, but it's really good. When I have been going over it recently, and I usually never read my books again once I have written them and page-proofed them, etc., then I know it nearly by heart, and I am glad not to know anything anymore about it. And then later on I pick it up, and then I feel, my word, that guy has said something terrific here. And actually, I was very much impressed by what is stated there. It really gives one the great turning point where, from an objective sense of creation, you get the turning point to the subjective sense of creation, namely to the consciousness of that order of creation. And it gives also the right standpoint from which to look out. So here I try to recapitulate a little bit what is in there, and perhaps in different words and different illustrations, but fundamentally you would have it there in those 10 pages. The Bible introduces the sixth day of creation, which culminates actually in the day of man, introduces it through the symbol first of the living creatures and the cattle. It says, "And God said, let the earth bring forth the living creatures after his kind, cattle and creeping thing, and beasts of the earth after his kind, and it was so." And we wonder what that should mean, and Mrs. Eddy gives us a key to this verse very much, because she shows that actually these animals, this creeping thing, and the living creature and cattle and so on, that they all represent really states of thought. The marginal heading is continuity of thoughts. So again, she starts out in mind with thoughts and shows that these thoughts, which are as eternal as the mind that conceives it, is actually aware of what? And so she begins to show first that spirit does what? Diversifies, classifies, and individualizes these thoughts. Here we get the great scientific method of how to take the whole of being and then through diversification, classification, individualization, so you see a whole hierarchy of categories, how through that whole hierarchy of rarefying thought constantly, we arrive at those thoughts that are divine. But intelligence, he says, naturally, existence and continuity of all individuality remain in God. Though they are translated right down to consciousness, to thinking, to man's thinking, we must see that they come from God and not from us, that thoughts are not from us, but that true thoughts and those thoughts that are eternal must be ideas of God that are translated to the point of consciousness as divine thoughts. So my epitome here is that creation consists of individualized ideas of God. And we very soon see in the next subtone what is meant by this. Because the next subtone, which brings in a touch of spirit, spirit is always showing the quality, the spiritual qualities, the reality of spiritual qualities. And so here the text reads, "And God made the beast of the earth after his kind, and cattle after their kind, and everything that creepeth upon the earth after his kind. And God saw that it was good." So again, the biblical writer adds to the preceding verse, where he has shown the diversification of the living things. They put it as living creature, as cattle, creeping thing, through that diversification of the living thing, that must be of the nature of good. And so Mrs. Eddy introduces now symbols that show us how we can see the universe of living things as a good universe. Namely, here she says first in the marginal heading, God's thoughts are spiritual realities. Can you see that now we have the touch of spirit namely that God's thoughts, which have been presented in truth's mind, now are shown in truth's spirit to be the realities of things, the real substance of things, that God's thoughts are spiritual realities, and that these spiritual realities in the next paragraph have the marginal heading, qualities of thought. Therefore, she will define here what are the qualities of that reality. We cannot just say that the reality is spiritual when we don't know what form and what content that reality includes. We must know something more about the specifics, because spirit diversifies, classifies, and individualizes all thought. So we must have the specific quality of the universe. And here it is that through some examples she introduced and says, look here, the lion, what does it stand for? Well, behind the lion is really the idea of moral courage. The lion is free and fearless. What is behind the cattle? Behind the cattle stand other qualities, real qualities, as for instance, diligence, promptness, perseverance, stern resolve, to keep pace with the highest purpose. So that all those qualities are symbolized by cattle. She takes the worm and says, what is a worm? Well, it symbolizes, again, a divine quality, like to be tireless, perseverant. Really, a worm has to be that quality of being persistent and perseverant. It never gets anywhere. Even the serpent she takes up and sees as a serpent, not that what the Western people see in a serpent, namely a poisonous serpent, seen from the Christian standpoint, from the divine standpoint. The serpent is a wise idea, charming in its adroitness. So can we see, she takes here four examples of animals and shows actually that these animals as living creatures are not just animals, but actually they symbolize certain qualities. Now, can you see that up to this point, from mind up to the fifth day of creation of life, she never showed what the qualities of ideas are. She only showed creation consists of ideas. She would show that these ideas are through spirit blessed, and that a spirit feeds and clothes them. But it was said with what, or what are the qualities of this spiritual nature. So you can feel out now here that at the beginning of that sixth day, for the first time is introduced that creation consists of definite qualities, and that these qualities can be symbolized just as the government of principle could be symbolized through the sun and the moon and the earth and the star, but they are symbols. And so she has taken here those living creatures that each one of them seemed to bring out a very specific quality. And this is so practically in every legend about animals and all the children's stories about animals, one always attributes somehow to an animal certain positive qualities. A dog is loyal, you know, he's loyal like a dog, and so on. I don't want to go on in that zoology of qualities, but you know very well that this is a practical symbolization for single qualities. Usually there is just one quality that is symbolized by an animal. After that, she has laid, or as far as to this point, she has, so to say, laid the foundation to bring out the quality of man. And from the next verse on, in that sixth day, we have a picture of man, what constitutes the spiritual quality of man. So, very often one has been asking, why doesn't the sixth day start right out with man? Why had she bring in first those creepy crawlies and all the living cattle and so on? Well, we see now that naturally this is a logical introduction, because when we come to truth as soul, where we had that God made man, naturally man represents all qualities and not just single qualities. What qualities he reflects are first shown through the cattle and the creep and the living things. So first we had to have to the presentation of all the qualities, of divine qualities, of the diversified qualities, which are being symbolized through the living things, so that afterwards one can see, but all those qualities together are constituting man. And so we have here, at this point, the great step into that realm of defining man. How does the Bible bring it out? The Bible says here, as truth, as soul, that's now the point where man comes into the picture, and the Bible says, and God said, let us make man. See, for the first time, man comes into the picture. All that has gone before was a great prerequisite in order to bring really our awareness to the point of being able to see what man is. So man, so to say, stands on the foundations of the first, second, third, fourth, and fifth day of creation. He cannot be what he is without an understanding of those first 5 days and the beginning of the sixth. So now, let us make man. Well, I first read it and then I read it again. Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over the cattle and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. The important aspect is the beginning of that verse. The end of that verse is that on which then the later verses build and elaborate. So I go back to that verse, and you have noticed that I have been accentuating different terms, and actually with some reason for it. What does it mean? And God said, let us. Who is the us? God speaks of himself as an us. And that is very clearly to be understood if one knows something about the original language. Actually, I don't know Hebrew or Aramaic, but one can read that in every good Bible commentary. God said, let us, because God here is Elohim. He's the Elohim, that term for God that has a pure sense and a very exalted sense. And that God of the Hebrew, as Elohim is a plural form. It's a plurality. It was always considered really that us is actually Father, Son, and Mother, the Trinity of the person of God. Though it is a one, it's a tri-unity of God, a tri-unity as one finds it in many other religions too. That one felt that the person of God is not just Father and not just Mother, but also Son. So we have here in the first marginal heading the Elohistic plurality, where Mrs. Eddy explains that eternal Elohim, that it is a plural form, so it relates to the oneness and trinity of life, truth, and love. I have also been told that Elohim has quite a unique connotation insofar that he is life, truth, and love, that it is actually a feminine noun with a masculine ending, which would really indicate very closely here what's going on, that Elohim, which Mrs. Eddy says right afterwards, the eternal Elohim includes the forever universe. And you see, the moment you have the person of God that includes something, it's the motherhood sense of it that always includes with herself the idea. You get a wonderful sense of the level of divine science here, that the whole aspect of truth actually is shown and presented from the level of divine science, namely that Elohim, the Mother of God, includes the Son and brings forth constantly, let there be, through the fatherhood of God. So you have that Trinity explained very nicely. Now, this is not just an academic interesting point. This is actually consciousness. It is the consciousness where we see, if I talk about God, first of all, I shouldn't talk about God up there, outside there. It is the divine principle of being. Therefore, whenever I talk about God as doing something, as being the creator of something, as governing something, as giving something, I should really be aware here that it is God as a love, the motherhood of God, which includes in her the idea, the perfect idea, the Son, already has within herself the established idea as the Son, and from that standpoint begins to enlighten and reveal the universe, life. So it is a state of consciousness, that Elohim. So let us make man, and therefore in our image, again a plural form, our, not in my image, but in our image. And it is in image, the older original form says, let us make man in our mind, because we know that man, the term man, in many of the older languages really means mind. So let us make man in our mind, in our image, after our likeness, after our likeness, and let them, apparently it is the plural form of man here, not the singular, and Mrs. Eddy explains that too. She indicates here, let them, in italics, have dominion, showing that man is the family name for all ideas, therefore for all men. And so we see that the very first motion that is shown here is that plurality of that triunity of God creates us their image, in their mind, all the individual reflection and ideas of mind. Let them, all the men, have dominion. That's why then she uses so much space for explaining reflection. All the next paragraph over to the, and the last paragraph also on this verse is all about reflection. That God actually reflects himself in everything. That life is reflected in existence, that truth is reflected in truthfulness, that love is reflected in goodness, so that man made in his likeness possesses and reflects God's dominion, that they reflect the infinite Father, Mother, God. And you can see again the plurality of it, that man, the Son, reflects the Father, Mother, life, love of God. So with that we have somehow tried to find some kind of a first text interpretation by interpreting the biblical symbols now with metaphysical symbols. But really the big point in it is that if you take that symbolization and ask yourself, what is the great turn that takes place at the point of truth? You see, the great turn, and this is impressive, it can really give you, take you the rest of the night and make you disquiet because you just think, my word, how big that is, you know, that up to this point we know that God always said, let there be, and God created. It was always God, as if God would be something, and that he is creating something there. That he created the light, he created the firmament, he created the herbs, and they have seed within themselves. He created all the relationships within the heavenly bodies. He created the fowls and the living things in the water, the fish in the waters, and multiplied them. It was always as if creation would be outside of deity. He did it, and it was left, so to say, in suspense at this moment where that creation is. But now we have another attitude.